Support for this podcast and the following message come from Investor.gov. Get to know an investment professional before trusting them with your hard-earned money. A free, simple search on Investor.gov can reveal important information to help make an informed decision. Before you invest, Investor.gov.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons, broadcasting from my home in Maryland. Airlines were soaring towards record travel numbers at the start of this year. Then, coronavirus hit like a lightning bolt.
Airlines posting dismal numbers.
The numbers seem to be getting worse and worse and worse.
In the U.S., United Airlines says it's cutting 20% of its international flights and 10% of domestic ones.
The global impact of the coronavirus outbreak has slashed billions of dollars from account books.
Delta Airlines losing hundreds of millions in quarter one.
The preliminary results for the first quarter, a pre-tax loss of $2.1 billion.
The airline industry is facing its biggest threat to travel since 9/11.
The average number of passengers on a domestic flight is now about 17. That's about one passenger per row. American taxpayers gave U.S. airlines a $50 billion bailout to help pull the industry out of a financial nosedive. But will that be enough? And what will the future of air travel look like in a post-pandemic world? Joining me now with their tray tables in the upright position and seatbelts securely fastened are Niraj Chokshi. He's a business reporter with the New York Times who covers transportation. He has a story out today titled, "The Airline Business is in Trouble. It will probably get worse." Welcome to the show, Niraj.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Sarah Nelson is the president of the Association for Flight Attendants, a union representing 50,000 flight attendants. Welcome back to the show, Sarah.
Always good to be on 1A.
And Josh Earnest, Chief Communications Officer for United Airlines. Hi, Josh.
Hi there. Glad to be here.
Josh, what's expected to have a bigger impact on the airline industry, coronavirus or 9/11?
The coronavirus, and it's not even close. The way that we have seen demand decline, the demand for air travel, the number of people buying tickets, it has fallen more sharply, it has fallen more deeply, and it has stayed at these historically low levels far longer than any other crisis that the airline business has ever faced before. And it is the hardest part, as terrible as that all sounds, and this is something that Niraj's story alludes to, the hardest part about all of this is we don't actually know when demand is going to start to come back. There's so much uncertainty around the virus and the efforts to find a vaccine and treatment. There's so much uncertainty about what the economic toll this virus will take and how long it will take to bounce back from that. And obviously, our business is very sensitive to the broader economic trends going on, not just around the United States, but around the world. So That uncertainty moving forward is a very, very steep challenge for those of us in the airline business.
And Sarah, speaking of uncertainty, I'm thinking of the airline workers. What's been the impact on them?
Well, this is huge. As Josh said, this is much, much, much bigger than 9/11. It's hard for me to compare it to that. I was around then. I lost dear friends. But the issue here is that we're not even out of the crisis yet, so we don't even know how deep this is going to go. And we were able to get some government funds to be able to protect jobs now and through September 30th. But we have had 8 flight attendants die. There are others fighting for their lives in hospitals right now. And overall, if we didn't have these government funds, 90% of us would be out of work.
Let's get to this $50 billion federal bailout of U.S. airlines. Here's how American Airlines CEO Doug Parker explains it in a message to employees.
This bipartisan government support comes in two different pieces. Half of it, or $25 billion, is in the form of loans for airlines. The second half is more interesting. There's another $25 billion of direct payments available to airlines, so long as one, we agree to retain some service to every airport in the United States that has commercial air service today, and two, we agree to not involuntarily furlough any of our team members. Both of those commitments would be in place until September 30th, at which time we all hope and expect this health crisis will be behind us and Americans will be flying again.
Sarah, here's your chance to unpack this for us. Tell us, you know, because you were highly involved in crafting this whole thing, what was the main goal here?
Well, the main goal was to make sure that we could keep people in their jobs, connected to their paychecks and their health care. So if nothing were done for the airline industry, as I said, we would have 90% of us out of work. We're talking about 2 million people in total with airports and airlines together. So that just adds to the unemployment lines, and we're already seeing that the system is not set up to be able to handle that. The other problem with that is that people stop paying taxes, they don't have access to their health care, and it's much more difficult to get the economy going again. So these direct payroll grants were critical, and we started working with Chairman DeFazio in the House because spending bills are typically originate in the House. And the full value of providing for the payroll of all the airline workers was $33 billion. That got cut down to $25 billion in the Senate. So there was already a reduction in the amount that could be given to the airlines in these payroll grants to keep up the payroll. On top of that, Secretary Mnuchin turned 30% of that grant into a loan. Now, you heard Doug Parker talk about $25 billion are also available in loans for operating costs for those airlines.
Right.
And so it was supposed to be 25 and 25. Once you turn 30% of that into loans, it's no longer a grant. And what that will do is, first of all, it's not really enough to cover the payroll costs of the employees until September 30th. We have a significant amount of workers who have taken voluntary time off, voluntary leaves or voluntary furloughs.
Mm-hmm. Voluntary retirement, too.
We haven't seen voluntary retirements yet.
Okay.
We're going to be talking about this, and we're hopeful that we can put in place some optional programs that will help people get off of the seniority list by September 30th, because as many of the airlines have talked about, there's no way we're going to snap back to the size of the airlines, the scope of the airlines that were in place on March 1st of this year. So we're going to need to provide some optional programs and possibly some additional federal funding, because we don't know yet when we're going to be able to get the virus under control and that demand will return and people will want to start buying tickets again.
Josh, you know, why should taxpayers bail out a private industry, especially one that's been reporting record profits in recent years?
Yeah, Sasha, and I think as Sarah just laid out, you know, the support that we've gotten from the federal government has been so important to our ability to survive. That support has been helpful primarily because we know that there are communities all around the country that rely on commercial airline service to connect them to the rest of the country and to connect them to the rest of the world. That's why one of the provisions in the law was that in exchange for accepting that support from the federal government, we would continue to provide service to many of these markets. So obviously the representatives in Congress believed that it was important for that service to be protected. And then as Niraj alluded to, there's so much of what happens in the airline business that has a direct impact on the economy in terms of, you know, the hundreds of thousands of workers just in the United States alone who have good middle class jobs through the airline business and how much business we facilitate. But the other thing that is important for people not to overlook is when you think about Uber drivers, the hotel business, the restaurant industry, even the convention business and tourist attractions. All of those are associated industries that are directly affected by our ability to transport people around the country and around the world. And so there is so much of our service that is an enabler for the rest of the economy. And mm-hmm. It's why it is so important that the federal grant, the federal support that we've received will allow us to continue to operate until we have flown through, hopefully, a lot of this uncertainty.
Yeah.
But look, we don't really know what October 1st is going to look like.
Yeah, we'll try to unpack that a bit more when we come back. We'll talk about, you know, where this bailout money is going and try to tackle consumer refunds, too. Coming up, what safety precautions are airlines taking to stop the spread of coronavirus? We're speaking with Niraj Chokshi, a business reporter with The New York Times covering transportation. Sarah Nelson, president of the Association of Flight Attendants, a union representing 50,000 flight attendants. And Josh Earnest, chief communications officer for United Airlines. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp, a truly affordable online counseling service. Fill out a questionnaire online and get matched with a licensed counselor best suited to your mental health needs. Whether it's depression, anxiety, or trauma, BetterHelp will help you overcome what stands in the way of your happiness. Learn more at BetterHelp.com and get 10% off your first month with promo code 1A. BetterHelp. Get help anytime, anywhere.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
We're spending more time at home than ever before. So now's a great time to finally adopt a dog, right?
Socialization is going to be harder because socialization and social distancing are definitely at odds.
So before you decide to adopt a canine companion during quarantine, listen and subscribe to NPR's Life Kit.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're talking about the impact of coronavirus on air travel. Passenger numbers are down to what they were in the 1950s. To give you some perspective, here's an airline ad from that era.
Once too remote for all but a handful of visitors, today there's a new highway to Hawaii. United Airlines Mainline Airway, which brings these magic islands as close as your next door neighbor. From 75 mainland cities, United's DC-6 mainliners converge on California, the real starting point of your Hawaiian holiday.
Josh, can you just help us understand this $50 billion bailout money? Where is it going, like as far as payroll and maintenance? And what about consumer refunds? Can you talk about that?
Yeah, as Sarah noted, the direct payments that we've received from the federal government have all gone to payroll. That didn't cover all of our payroll costs, but it covered an important part of it. And so that was the intent of the program, was to make sure that people could stay on the payrolls. That's a commitment that we made to federal taxpayers. That's a commitment we made to our employees, and we've kept it. We've also applied for the grant or for the loan portion of the program, sort of the second half of that allotment. We have until September 30th to decide whether or not it'll be necessary for us to draw down those funds. So mm-hmm. we're working with the federal government on that. Go ahead.
I want to bring in some engagement. We're getting a lot of listeners sharing their stories with us and experiences. Rob tweeted to us. He says, after flying over 80,000 plus miles for the past 4 years, I have no desire to get back on a plane until the risk of COVID-19 are further mitigated. Josh, what's your response to that? That's a common fear.
Yeah, it is. The first thing that people should understand, I think, is just the extraordinary steps that we're taking to keep people safe on board aircraft. We started just last week a requirement that all people on board an aircraft have to be wearing a mask, customers and crew. That, of course, is consistent with the CDC advice that we've gotten, that if you're in a situation where you're in public and you can't safely socially distance, then you should wear a mask. We've overhauled our cleaning procedures. We're now using devices called electrostatic sprayers. These are devices that hospitals use to disinfect hospital rooms. We're using them to disinfect the interior of our aircraft. We purchased 750 of these devices. Beginning next month, we'll be using them before every single flight. We're overhauling our boarding procedures, and both the procedures for getting on the plane and getting off to reduce congestion in the aisles. We've installed plexiglass at many of our gate locations in airports around the country so that our customer service staff and customers can safely interact in person. So people can feel confident that we are doing everything we can think of to try to make the environment on board the aircraft and making their way through the airport safe. That's useful now because by and large, the planes are not very full. The airports are not very full. So it's actually a good time for us to be testing new policies and procedures to optimize them so that as people do begin to start to fly again, and I think we will see more people flying once communities and cities and states begin to open up again, that we can have those policies in place, that we can practice them, and we can ensure that we're keeping people safe when they're ready to get back in the air.
Sarah, I want you to consider this message here we got on Facebook from Rianne. She says, no bailouts for big business. Let them fail. Let the market decide. A question for you directly, Sarah, why not let the airlines go bankrupt?
Well, I actually wrote an op-ed about this. No, that's really the wrong approach. We've been there before. What happened after 9/11 was that the federal bailout didn't work. Money didn't really get to the airlines. We all ended up in bankruptcies. I had a front row seat to the 38-month-long United Airlines bankruptcy. And actually 20 other bankruptcies that we saw up close and personal during that time. And what happened was that led also to consolidation. That led to the things that people don't like today. It led to the consolidation, the seats closer together, the airline fees, everything that consumers don't like. And what that also did was it made the employees shoulder the burden of that economic downturn. So we took 30% and 40% cut in pay. We lost our pensions. We had to work longer hours. Productivity was running at very high levels like every other industry. So we're having to work much more to make the same amount of money. We were just getting around to the first round of bargaining after the bankruptcies and the mergers where this consolidation took place that really, you know, the workers and the consumers were both squeezed in that era. If you let the airlines go bankrupt again, the taxpayers lose total control of what happens here. If you don't want to see the workers have to shoulder this burden, who are also the taxpayers and the people who are creating value and creating value in the economy, and if you want to make sure that the consumers' needs are addressed, then you keep control here by making sure that the industry is not punished for something that it didn't create. We're not even out of this problem yet, but the people who are so angry about that and want to let the airlines go bankrupt, that's not people in a boardroom who are going to get hurt. Trust me, in a bankruptcy, what happens is that they can take all the bonuses that they want, and in fact, more. The bankruptcy lawyers who worked for United Airlines during the bankruptcy charged $25 million in lunches alone. I don't think that's what the American people want to see. And in this case, we can craft a package that's a relief package for the airlines mm-hmm. that's going directly to the workers, to the taxpayers, to the consumers. And I think that that's really what people want to see here. And they also want to see a control on those stock buybacks. We got all of those things here. Never before in the history of this country have we ever had a bailout package that goes to a corporation, tells them exactly how to spend the money. It has to go directly to the people on the front lines. The economy is built back up from the ground up rather than from the top down. And there's certain controls put on that company for that money. No stock buybacks, caps on executive compensation, no dividends, and no layoffs.
Yeah.
So this is really a new way of thinking about things, and it's a better way for taxpayers to keep control.
Josh, I want to circle back to our discussion a moment ago. We talked about profits. You know, we're getting a lot of engagement on Twitter, folks saying that when I asked you earlier about taxpayers, why taxpayers are bailing out airlines that have been recording record profits, that you didn't quite answer the question. Do you want to take another stab at that?
Well, I think I did, but I'm happy to take another stab at it. If the service that we provide is essential, and the reason that we saw federal representatives in Congress take an extraordinary step to provide us valuable support is because they recognize that the service that we provide is so essential. And that's why we've continued to supply those markets. Those members in Congress also recognize that the jobs that we support are really important to the economy. And so that's why we were willing to make a commitment that we weren't going to lay anybody off in this period in which we're accepting that federal assistance. So I think those are really sort of the two key parts of people understanding that answer. Mm-hmm. And I think the other part of it is people have to understand that we've also made dramatic cuts all across our business. It's not just as if we're operating the same way that we did on March 1st, and we're just sort of pocketing the federal money. We have made dramatic cuts. As Sarah pointed out, we ended our stock buyback program. Both the president and CEO of our company have stopped taking a salary. Executives of our company have all reduced our pay by 50%. Tens of thousands of United workers have stepped forward and said that they were voluntarily going to reduce their hours or take a pay cut or take an unpaid leave. That's an extraordinary show of loyalty. We've reduced our schedule by 90%. So it mm-hmm. means we're flying many fewer flights than we did before. That, of course, saves money. We've dramatically scaled back the amount of money that we're spending on capital projects, on other sort of operating expenses. We've scrubbed that system. We've also taken a bunch of the assets that we have, aircraft and other things, and gone to the private market and secured billions in private financing just to raise liquidity so we can hopefully have enough money to make it through this crisis. So I also think it would be a mistake for people to assume that, oh, we're just sort of living off the government dole here. We're actually taking extraordinary steps all across our business, and we're seeing our frontline employees join in that sacrifice to ensure that this company can survive and come out on the other end stronger than ever.
Niraj, I want you to weigh in on that as well. You know, the airline profits. Also, you know, airline executives and the idea, you know, should airline executives continue making millions of dollars a year while their industry is being propped up by taxpayers?
Well, you know, the CARES Act does actually cap executive compensation, both the loans for operating the airlines and then also the grants that were intended for employees both came with provisions to cap pay and cap bonuses. I think starting at about $425,000 a year.
Okay.
You know, and those I think those provisions speak to, you know, I think about those provisions a lot when I wonder if the industry needs another bailout. You know, will they be able to get it? I mean, I think those speak to the concerns a lot of the public has about, you know, bailing out industries in general.
Are airlines a public good, Niraj?
You know, I mean, there's a strong argument, yes, right? I mean, can you imagine a world without air travel? Can you imagine a world without, you know, tourism without air travel? Can mm-hmm. you imagine Disneyland without
right,
air travel?
Right.
I mean, it's hard to imagine. I mean, you know, what life would be like without being connected in that way. And that's not to mention, you know, airlines, passenger airlines, the ones that people fly in, carry half of the world's cargo, and you know, a lot of that cargo is valuable. It can be includes fast fashion, it includes seafood, it includes mm-hmm. you know, new smartphones when they're released, and so, I mean, removing airlines would be devastating to the world economy.
If they do fail, are we expecting them to merge or fail because of this crisis?
I think it's probably fair to say both. We've already seen some failures, not in the U.S., but well, actually, in the U.S., there was a regional carrier in Alaska, Raven, that filed for bankruptcy last month. On Sunday, Avianca in Latin America, it's the world's second largest in Latin America, and one of the world's oldest airlines, filed for bankruptcy.
Let's pause right there. Coming up, are you wondering if you should reschedule that flight to Vegas that you booked for this August? We'll try to get you an answer, more from our guests and from you in a moment.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Starbucks by Nespresso. With rich, authentic Starbucks espresso now available for Nespresso Original Line machines, you can make a moment for yourself, all with the push of a button. Simply relax and enjoy your favorite espresso at home. Sip into a finer state with new Starbucks by Nespresso capsules, available in select grocery stores.
The biggest story in the world is a science story. And keeping up with all the latest coronavirus research, it's a lot. So on Shortwave, we translate the science you need to know into short daily episodes. Listen and subscribe to Shortwave from NPR.
Now we're talking about air travel and how this will, this pandemic will change that whole experience. My guests are Niraj Chokshi, a business reporter with the New York Times who covers transportation, Sarah Nelson, the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, a union representing 50,000 flight attendants, and Josh Earnest, chief communications officer for United Airlines. I wanted to jump right to a tweet here from Katie. Katie says, if airlines are so vital to the country, perhaps they should be nationalized. Niraj, is this feasible? I mean, it was the norm before the 70s. What are the pros and cons of nationalizing airlines?
You know, I mean, that's a good question.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, it was the norm. It was once the norm. I don't know how easy it would be to put that cat back in the bag at this point. you know, it's... It's difficult. I don't get the sense. I don't think that there's a strong hunger among lawmakers or you know the broader public to kind of nationalize an industry as large as this one. Mm-hmm. And I think it would be an undertaking on such a massive scale.
Sarah, what external factors need to be in place before air travel starts to rebound? So looking to the future here, do we need a vaccine? Is that it? Do we need hotels to reopen? What are we looking for here?
So it's a combination of everything you just said and more. And I'm looking here at a postcard that I got. It says President Trump's coronavirus guidelines for America. And it only mentions two industries, actually, in this postcard specifically. It says don't go to restaurants and avoid discretionary travel. So there has been direct advice from our government to avoid travel and to avoid gathering groups of more than 10. So we see all across the country right now people really showing solidarity in helping our healthcare providers get a handle on this virus. We absolutely have to get to a place where it's more contained, but we also have to do the things that Josh has been talking about, putting in place these layers of safety. And so they're talking now about potentially having TSA check for temperatures when people get to the airport. We've got masks required across the board at our airlines. We are looking at, as Josh was saying, United is planning to clean right before every single flight with the electrostatic sprayers. That's really important. Mm-hmm. And we also are going to need some social distancing policies on the plane, because even though everyone is required to wear a mask, we're still going to have medical emergencies on the plane, and we've got to have the ability to move people away from each other. We're still going to have kids eventually who are getting on board. Toddlers, try to get them to wear a mask for 4 hours. It's not going to happen.
Right.
So we've got to be able to use that social distancing. And if we don't have some of those seats blocked out, that's going to be very hard to do. And if that is not coordinated from the federal government, that's also going to be hard for the airlines to do, because they are operating off of the cheapest tickets, if you account for inflation, since deregulation. And so more people have access to flying. But what that means is that they've really had to control capacity and make a profit by having those airlines run at least 80% full capacity. So we're going to continue to lose money if we don't get back to that, or if we don't have continued federal funding to support these safety procedures until we have a vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, maybe you can also answer this question that Bridget left in our inbox.
I had booked a flight to Costa Rica in June, and obviously that was being canceled. But I wanted to know what you thought about booking now for maybe 9 months from now, if that's a good idea.
I think that Bridget can go ahead and book that ticket, and I'll tell you why. We are at work right now trying to identify what procedures need to be in place to make sure that we're safe. And I have no doubt with the action that I've seen over the past month, especially with the airlines really taking the lead, even in absence from leadership from our government, putting in place all the layers that will help to keep people safe. So in 9 months' time, no one has a crystal ball. We don't know exactly how the coronavirus is going to move here, if we're going to have a second wave, what that's going to look like. But I believe very strongly that we are going to continue to assess this with science and put in place the safety measures and safety net that will make it safe to travel.
A lot of our listeners are sharing their stories with us about their canceled trips. Elaine tweeted, "We were scheduled to raft through the Grand Canyon in June. We'd been waiting 17 months for the trip of a lifetime. It was canceled 2 weeks ago." Andy wrote on Facebook, "I plan to fly Southeast Asia, as soon as tourism opens back up. I assume flights will be dirt cheap, as many will stay away from Asia because of the virus. Perfect time to fly." Now, Josh, I want to talk about refunds with you as well. Can I get a cash refund if I need to cancel a flight that I booked before this pandemic?
So, Sachin, we have provided extraordinary flexibility to our customers. If you have a refundable ticket, you can, of course, get a refund anytime that you want. The question is about non-refundable tickets. And, you know, this is a difficult question because, you know, many situations where people are looking to reschedule their travel, it's not because of the fault of the individual traveler. It's also not because of the fault of the airline. We've had many foreign countries that have basically shut down air travel into their country. So here's the policy that we have put in place. We have basically said to our customers, again, if you have a refundable ticket, you can get a refund anytime you want. If you have a non-refundable ticket, what we will do is we will refund you that money, even on a non-refundable ticket, if your travel is disrupted by more than 6 hours. If we can accommodate you on a different flight within 6 hours, then we will provide you those new accommodations, or we will give you electronic travel certificate that is good for future travel for another 24 months. We know people are looking for flexibility, and so that's what that provides. The other thing related to the previous question that also is related to this one is we do know people want flexibility. So if you are thinking about future travel and booking for future travel, if you buy your ticket this month before the end of May, you can change that travel for any reason without paying a fee. And again, we're sensitive to the idea that there's a whole lot of uncertainty out there, whether it's as a result of the coronavirus or something else. And so we want to provide that that flexibility to our customers. And so, that's another reason to give them to fly.
Josh, I understand that, you know, the distinction between, you know, the refundable versus the non-refundable tickets. But, you know, in the instance that you're giving these vouchers, what good is a voucher to someone who's now terrified of getting back on an airplane? And, you know, given the state of the economy right now, surely you would understand why some people would want their money back.
Sure. And again, that's why we have basically extended the deadline. Typically, when you get an earned, a travel certificate like that, good for future travel, that's something that you have to use within 12 months. And we've said that people could have 24 months to use that. And again, that kind of flexibility is what we found that, you know, the vast majority of our customers are looking for.
Niraj, why are so many complaints coming in that people can't get refunds? Are airlines finding ways to avoid them?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there are a lot of complaints, and you know, a lot of it.
Yeah, we're getting a lot of them here too on social. Yeah.
Right, and a lot of lawmakers are getting them too. There was a hearing last week on the state of the industry, and Senator Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut took the industry to task, and you know, he said that the practices of, you know, kind of redirecting consumers who are seeking refunds to vouchers are, you know, in some cases, deceptive. But, you know, the industry, I mean, the industry is in a very difficult spot. Mm-hmm. The person who was representing the airlines at the hearing, who the chief executive of the industry trade group, he said that, you know, essentially if airlines refunded all the tickets that they could right now, they would risk bankruptcy. Mm-hmm. And so they're in a tough spot. And, you know, some of them are pushing vouchers. Some of them are maybe pushing them too hard, according to their critics.
Yeah. And Consumer Reports has a petition with more than 80,000 signatures asking for cash refunds. So, you know, clearly a huge, huge issue. Sarah, I wanted to point this question to you. It's a tweet from Holly. She says, with the air being cycled in the plane, does it even matter how far away from the other passengers people are?
Yes, it does, because the air doesn't just cycle through again and again and again. There is fresh air coming in also from outside and is cycled into the cabin along with the air that's already there. It's important that you've got a layer of protection here. So wearing a mask and everyone wearing a mask will keep the virus from spreading if there's someone on board who's infected and is not aware. So that's really important. And it's important to not be near to people because, as we've learned also, the virus can hang in tiny aerosol particles for a period of time in the air. And if you're away from people, that gives the ability for that to settle before you would be coming in contact with it. So that social distancing is still important.
Jumping to an email from Bubba. Bubba says, it's sad to see any industry struggle, but one has to wonder if the airlines didn't create some of this problem long before COVID-19. Airlines have been progressively making flying less and less desirable. Smaller seats, crammed in, less and less services on the flight. I'm sorry to the workers, but the airlines, eh. So Josh, I'm wondering, you know, what do you say to something like that? And also, quickly, what advice do you have for people who want to fly but are hesitant?
Yeah. Well, I think for people who are feeling uncertain, the first thing I would say is that we at the airlines are doing the same thing that people all across the country are doing, which is doing our best to follow the guidance and advice from public health professionals about what we can do to keep our customers and our crew safe. And so we're going to continue to do that because the advice is from public health professionals is going to continue to evolve as they learn more about the virus. So we encourage people to do that and to have some confidence knowing that the airlines are doing that too. The second thing is, our ticketing policies are more flexible than they've ever been. Mm-hmm. And so if people are thinking about travel, certainly an option for them is to go ahead and buy that ticket knowing that they can change down the line without a fee if they choose to do so. And I think that is the other big limiting factor here that we haven't discussed, which is the primary reason, at least my perception is, that people aren't traveling is not because they're worried about the safety onboard the aircraft, but the places where they're going are not open. Disneyland isn't open. Conventions are canceled. There are no graduations. So people don't have as much to travel to as they otherwise would.
There's nowhere to go to right now anyway. Yeah, gotcha. I've been speaking with Josh Earnest, Chief Communications Officer for United Airlines. Sarah Nelson, she's the president of the Association of Flight Attendants, a union representing 50,000 flight attendants. And Niraj Chokshi, a business reporter with the New York Times who covers transportation. He has a story out today titled, "The Airline Business is Terrible. It will probably get even worse." Thanks to everyone. Before we go, we've been doing this for weeks, and so as long as you keep sending us your acts of kindness, we're going to keep sharing them. Today's story comes from Kelly in Tallahassee, Florida.
I'm a returning student who is graduating from college this year from Flagler College in Tallahassee. A lot of the students in my group are returning students, and so we were all really excited to cross the stage, but we weren't able to because of coronavirus, and instead our instructors arranged a Zoom meeting after our last class last night and played some graduation music for us, let us all talk to each other, and this morning we were able to pick up our tassels and graduation caps from an outdoor location that was all full of balloons and class of 2020 signs, and they just made it really special.
Awesome. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us, Kelly. If you have an act of kindness to share, we'd love to hear from you. Our number is 855-236-1212. James Morrison produced today's show. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thanks so much for listening. This is 1A.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security. More information is available online at carnegie.org.